Yes, so we just finished talking about people trying to not have kids, and now we're going to talk about people trying to have kids who can't. So, kind of an easy transition. The reproductive technologies, I've read this is a whole brave new world. So I'm going to give you an account that happened in L.A. when I was there. You might have remembered it. Actually, it wasn't when I was there, but it was after. But on January 26, 2009, a team of 46 medical personnel at the Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Bellflower, California, successfully delivered 8 babies. Only the second set of full octuplets born alive in the United States, they surpassed the previous set, with all 8 surviving more than a week. During the press conference, the identity of the mother was concealed, and very little was known about her. However, in the days following, a media frenzy ensued as the press uncovered her identity, lifestyle, as well as how she came to conceive 8 babies. Nadia Suleiman, already the mother of 6 children, lived with her mother in a small 3-bedroom house in Whittier, California. In addition, state records have shown that she has received $165,000 in disability payments for an on-the-job back injury between the years of 2002 and 2008. Known as the Octomom, Suleiman conceived the children by in vitro fertilization through sperm donated by David Solomon, a former boyfriend. According to Suleiman, upon realizing that she simply wanted him to father her children, she ended the relationship and persuaded Solomon to donate his sperm. Do you guys remember this at all? Yeah, so it's quite the story. Now, in your view, why has there been such a public backlash against the Octomom? In the public's view, what should she have done? Let the opinions fly. These are not your opinions. But what would the man on the street say about this? Yeah, go ahead.
Too many kids.
Too many kids, yeah. You already have 6. You're a single mother with 6. What's your name?
Drew.
Drew, okay.
I'm here because of these kind folk. I finally got to take off of work to come to church.
So okay, Drew and Dave, nice to meet you. Thanks for participating. Keep it up. All right.
10 pastor points.
10 pastor points. Yeah, first-timer contributing, that's great. Yeah, so she already had so many kids, yeah, why 8? Yeah, what would be some other thoughts that people would have?
She's single.
Yeah, why would that be an issue?
She has no way of providing for them. Mm-hmm. She already has 14 kids. She can't go to work.
Yeah.
Them.
She lives with her mother. Another thing, in a 3-bedroom house. I mean, like, just quality of life type stuff would be something someone would bring up for sure.
Yeah, you think about 8 cribs. Yeah, there's a couple in Iowa. Do you remember them? They had like 7 kids. But they were very involved in their church community, and apparently the church had like this whole thing like around the clock. I need to look them up, find out what happened.
Do you remember if she was like just what her initial goal was? You know, because oftentimes they were just trying to get pregnant versus have as many as, like, if she was trying to have 8.
She already had 6.
But like these eight all were like in one. What I'm saying is, was she trying to get pregnant and ended up having 8? You know what I mean? Like,
we'll talk more about that.
That's what I mean, like the number.
Usually they don't allow that many.
So there'd be...
Right.
Yeah,
right.
The doctor did
that. So those are the criticisms from the right, right? Yeah, you're already on welfare. What are you doing to have more kids? But what would be the criticisms on the left?
Irresponsible to bring that many human beings into the world that's already at its capacity.
Yeah, kind of an ecological argument, right? You're threatening the carrying capacity of the planet.
Carbon footprints
and all that. Yeah, and I'm not mocking. I mean, that's what many of them would say, right? The planet has a certain carrying capacity. You bring in too many humans, you're all the, it's the Thanos argument for those of you watching Avengers Endgame, right?
Well, then they would also say that, especially if it was, if there was anything on the right supporting her not to have 8 more kids, would be the fact that, well, she has, we don't want the government into our bedrooms and whatnot.
Okay.
You can't dictate that. That's what.
Yeah, it's her body. She can do what she wants.
That's there you go. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what else would be argued? What would Planned Parenthood say about this?
Her health is at risk.
Yeah.
Carrying that many babies.
Yeah.
Not being brave.
Yeah.
Or like you mentioned, some of it, it was a, with all 8 surviving more than a week, like I don't know how many total ended up surviving.
There's all survived. Actually, I looked up some pictures. They're a pretty good looking family. They're good looking kids. Yeah, you might hear the term selective abortion.
Like the weakest chances.
So maybe it's all 8 took. So maybe we ought to get rid of the ones that look the weakest.
Right.
Okay? Which is normally what happens with in vitro fertilization. If they put in like more than 4 and all 4 take, they'll do selective abortions with that. Okay, so though in vitro fertilization, Dr. Michael Camarava implanted the remaining 6 embryos from her previous IVF treatment. So she's had a history of doing this, right? She's had IVF treatments, and so she had 6 leftover eggs. 2 of the embryos split, resulting in 8 children. Aware of the potential dangers of carrying so many children, doctors offered Suleiman a selective abortion, which she declined. Now, from the above information, why did Suleiman seek to carry the remaining 6 embryos? This is where it gets pretty interesting. Why do you think she wanted to carry the remaining 6?
Maybe she believed they were all humans.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was interesting, in an interview, she just said, those are my babies. So she saw all 6 of them as little lives. Okay? And then, you know, how can you argue for the wisdom of Suleiman's actions, kind of in light of that?
Well, it's like, there's the question of what she should do and should have done before the fertilization, and then it's once the once they're conceived embryos, then your options change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you see how this whole element of in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, reproductive technology, it's a loaded topic. It's very complex. I actually looked up 1.9% of all births are done through like assisted reproductive technology, and that's when you have an egg extracted and then implanted outside the womb and put back in. And there's different ways of doing that, but almost 2% of all births are ART, and that doesn't count artificial insemination. And so it's kind of a growing topic. There's some reasons for it. I want to do some more research about the trends. My guess would be just the average age of getting married has increased. I guess when I got married, it's 27 now. I think it's 28. So people are waiting longer to have kids. There's probably something to be said about, I think, maybe with the rise of gay marriage, more couples are trying to have children and, you know, in non-traditional ways, I guess.
I have a question then.
Yeah.
What did the ex-boyfriend end up doing? Because
he was fine just donating the sperm, that was it.
See, for me, that would be hard to just know that I have 8 kids running around and I'm not part of it.
8 kids. Huh? It gets weird, by
okay.
the way. It gets weird. We'll talk about it. Okay. So the case of the Octomom has placed reproductive technologies on the forefront of our cultural consciousness. Her pro-life stance with regards to her embryos highlights some of the ethical concerns which accompany reproductive technologies. For instance, should single mothers be inseminated? What potential risk does IVF carry for the mothers and the babies? What should be done with frozen embryos? In this study, we will look at the ethics of reproductive technology so that we can have a biblical grid for answering the difficult questions. So, this is when we get to, we'll talk about artificial insemination. So, Ben, I know you're kind of familiar with this, right?
Cattle.
Being with the cattle. Yeah. So, yeah, so we were talking, I guess you were asking, how long has it been around? Do you know how long they've been inseminating cattle?
Mm-mm.
So why did they switch?
Probably 30, 40 years, I suppose. Horses? So, cattle. Mm-hmm.
So why did they switch from insemination to, from traditional breeding to insemination?
Well, they just have better genetics. Like if you have a bull that's just exceptional, you want to, you know, have him spread his genetics to more cattle.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it naturally, so you just collect it and you can get into more cattle that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the heifers too, you know, if they have a heifer with exceptional genetics, they'll extract the eggs and then fertilize them outside and then put the embryos in back in the cow.
Wow.
Or other heifers that aren't as good.
Right, right.
Just
yeah,
carry
them. Exactly.
So how much is that procedure per?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't do
that. How much does it cost per dose per cow?
For the
sperm donation?
AI, how? $30, $40 probably.
Wow.
But a bowl costs.
Yeah, bowls are. Yeah, those kind of bowls that they're doing that with are, I mean, they can be up to $100,000,
yeah.
Some of them.
Really?
Or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you still have to feed them and hope they don't
yeah.
get sick.
It's a big risk. Bring them into the house when it gets cold.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hey, Dave.
Huh?
This says that John Hunter wrote the first report on artificial insemination in medical literature in
1790. Okay. There you go. So I've been trying to be very careful about my doing research for this. I've been having Beckett look things up.
Oh.
Yeah, artificial. So types of artificial insemination. The procedure is relatively simple. Sperm is collected, then deposited through a syringe near a woman's cervix. All goes well, the woman conceives and delivers a healthy baby. There are two types of artificial insemination. AID, insemination using a donor's sperm, and AIH, insemination using a husband's sperm. Okay, so any controversy with insemination using a husband's sperm? Yeah, I mean, it's a husband and wife. Perhaps a husband has a low sperm count, and so by collecting more, you have a better chance of fertilizing the egg. So it's using technology to help. There's no outside relationship. The controversial one is artificial insemination with the donor sperm. Okay? So benefits of artificial insemination, if the father has a low sperm count, more sperm can be collected and then deposited and increase the possibility of fertilization. If the husband is infertile, the use of donor sperm is cheaper and easier than adoption. The cost of it, I looked it up, is about $300 to $4,000. You can introduce superior traits into baby's genetics. So, what's your assessment of the above benefits? What do you guys think? Drew, you don't like it.
No, because, you know, back where I'm from, I know a lot of families who adopt,
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, I feel personally,
mm-hmm.
sorry if this offends anyone, that it's unfair to the children that are already in this world that need loving parents, because I,
uh-huh.
you know, a lot of my friends who have been adopted, they went in terrible homes and then they finally ended up in good ones, and you know, I just sit here and I'm like, you know, if for whatever reason I can never have kids, I'm gonna adopt.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair to children that are already in this world.
Now, would you say that for AIH and AID?
I wouldn't say it because if it's a husband.
It's a husband.
If it's a husband, because you know, like there's, you know, I knew a family back home
yeah.
who had that exact issue, and they wanted kids, and, you know, they couldn't necessarily afford adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was fair to them, I guess.
Yeah, and so that's why I think it's kind of that's using technology to kind of help that to move life. But yeah, the donor issue is a different one, right? What else do you guys think? What other thoughts do you have?
What about legal issues? Because technically that's his kid, the donor, whoever they are, it's their kid, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's different ways that they can go about.
Like genetically.
Yeah, genetically it is, but there's usually, if you go with a sperm bank, they have you sign a bunch of legal contracts and everything. I mean, you get into some real complicated issues, like even with surrogacy, which is kind of growing in popularity. And I might look into that. I don't have it in this lesson, but we might talk about it. But yeah, if there's a, legally, you know, like a man sells a sperm and then he loses the right to it. To that control, but in exchange, you can't be sued.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to get it through an official source, you can.
Yeah, and I mean, like, but think of it ethically, or just, you know.
Yeah, and that's the question.
Yeah. I think it would just be weird to if they're not gen. I mean, I guess it's in a weird way, it's like adoption, but. Without, you know.
Well, adoption, like if you're a single mother and you had to choose between adoption and this, the easiest and cheapest choice would be to pony up $300.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to work, you know, you don't have legal paperwork, all this, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
foster. it's just a lot easier than fostering or even going through the adoption
mm-hmm.
process. So that's, I'm not defending, I'm just saying that's kind of the.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you get a baby that you're genetically connected to,
mm-hmm.
which means a lot to a lot of people.
Now, a lot of women, like if they want to have a baby, they want to go through the experience of like carrying the baby,
mm-hmm.
you know, just that.
Yeah,
I think
I've never wanted to do that. By the way,
some do.
I think for me, it brings up the question of. You think about, you know, when and originally God created the world and everything was good,
mm-hmm.
and then through the curse, everything was affected by the curse.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about medical technology, sometimes it seems like, you know, we think about God being sovereign over you, whether or not you are get pregnant or have kids or have many kids, and whether they're boys and girls. And so sometimes we view it as, well, whatever happens naturally is God's will, but on the other hand, we think, well, we come up with medicine to kind of restore the effects of the curse. And so this is one of those areas where are we going against the original design, or where are we trying to restore the function,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's been diminished because of the curse?
Yeah, here's some stats. U.S. donor or egg donations. You're looking at it's responsible for 30,000 to 60,000 births per year. So you split the difference to about 45. That's about 1%. So you look at, you kind of combine that number, assuming I'd say egg donation might be a little bit more rare than sperm donation.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at about 3% of all births, in vitro fertilization and artificial insemination. So that's quite a number.
More common than I would.
Over $100,000, over 100,000 births.
That's just in our country?
In our country, yeah. About 3% of all births. Yeah, so it's very, very, very common.
I think maybe another reason it might appeal to some women, though, is just that cultural sense of wanting to have control, of the pregnancy, even,
uh-huh.
of what they do, the things they eat. You know, just having control to have a healthy baby.
I think the introducing superior traits into the baby's genetics.
Well, that's a big
mm-hmm.
cultural.
Yeah, you kind of go through the catalog and, you know, when you actually, I'll talk about this
in my next
section, because I've got read some interesting articles this week. Research by Becky, of course. Practical concerns. Legally, AID can open a Pandora's box regarding the legal ties to the biological father. The Uniform Parentage Act holds that if a husband consents to his use of AID, then he will be the legal father. However, it is questionable if this will hold up in a court of law. So, if Becky uses AID and I consent to it, apparently I am the legal father if I consent. Another legal issue would be the doctor's or the sperm bank's liability if the baby is born with hereditary or genetic defect. There are some concerns regarding whether or not the husband can develop a bond with a child who is not genetically his. Four, if the husband knows that his daughter is not his biological descendant, he may be more prone to consider incest. Five, unintentional incest may occur since doctors routinely use the same sperm donor to conceive children. This, coupled with the fact that customers live in the same geographical area, increases the possibility of siblings unwittingly dating and marrying each other. Six, this technology allows lesbian couples to conceive and bear children. Seven, this technology can lead to single-parent households. Eight, this technology obscures the genetic past of the child. Research has shown that doctors do an extremely poor job of record-keeping, as it would be difficult to track the biological father. This comes into play when attempting to discern whether or not the child has genetically controlled disease. So, I read this article, it was in the New York Times pretty recently, about this guy named Jonathan Jacob Meijer, M-E-I-J-E-R. Go ahead and look him up. Go ahead, look him up and tell me what you see, John. So, Jonathan Jacob Meijer, M-E-I-J-E-R. Did you get him?
I think I said. I gotta type it right. M-E-I.
J-E-R. Jonathan Jacob Meijer. That is him. He looks like a hunky Viking. Hunky Viking. So he's from, I think he's from Denmark. But there's a New York Times story written about him where they think he has donated sperm and has fathered over 1,000 children. Normally they have sperm bank limits of like, you can only use one donor sperm for 25 births. And that's in some of the European countries. In the U.S., it's actually pretty unregulated. And so they actually, in this story, they had, there was another guy like 30 years ago who was responsible for like 500 births in one town, I think, in the Netherlands. And so they have a group chat where all these sons and daughters have a group chat so that they all know who each other are, because they want to make sure that if they go on a date with somebody in this town, that they don't accidentally fall in love with their half-brother or sister. And one guy even says, I have a very keen eye where I can see some of the traits. And so in one town, and I think it's in the Netherlands, there's like 500 half-brothers and sisters in the same place.
It's like the opposite of the Bible. It's like, make sure you get somebody from our clan. Now it's like, make sure you don't get
somebody. So this article just donates all, or basically profiles all these super donors who just have this need to spread the genes. And so this guy, Jonathan Jacob Meijer, he travels overseas, and there's this cottage industry where he'll give his sperm for a low price, but if you want to meet me and talk to me, you have to pay for my expenses to do so. So he's flown to South Africa, to Australia, all expenses paid. And the guy looks like, the cover boy of a Harlequin romance novel. He's a musician, and he's very sensitive and nice. And so people are like, I want him to be the father. I want my children to be very good looking, so I'll choose him. So that's, crazy story. But There's a guy in New York who, same type of thing. He thinks he's fathered 600 kids and counting, and it's just kind of created this whole industry.
So if a lady goes into one of these places, do you get like a catalog that you go through and you can see who the people look like and learn their history?
There's Anonymous, where you might just get like a profile, or there's, you can actually know who they are, where you see the picture and... Yeah, so you kind of have like just turning the page and just...
But they have a medical profile of that person.
Yeah.
Sounds like agriculture.
I know, so when you guys... When I kind of knew all this, and then I asked you guys how that... There you go.
Exactly.
More like animal.
Yeah.
Livestock.
Yeah, animal breeding. Yeah. Right, so... Yeah, so that's kind of the world that this kind of gets into, and I think it's interesting how it commodifies children, it commodifies the reproductive process, and there's just a certain vanity both ways, right? Where, you know, the single mother would want to have her children looking like that, and then he thinks that the world would be a better place if he spreads the seed all over the world. So how does this strike you guys so far? Like, what's your instinct about this?
Very wrong.
Okay. So why would you say that? Before we get to the morality issues, let's try to consider why is this troublesome?
Because it's, I think it's against marriage, and I
okay.
You know, God meant for, you know, a marriage between a man and a woman,
mm-hmm.
and that union was to be the perfect family, and when you have a man that's donating his sperm all over the place, that's against, you know, what God
mm-hmm.
naturally meant marriage to be, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it basically introduces a third party into
mm-hmm.
marriage. Okay. Other thoughts about why this might strike you as wrong? Jens, do you have some thoughts? I know you do.
Can do it doesn't mean we should do it.
Yeah,
I think that's the kind of world we're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is developing, but I mean, we have a cousin that they tried to adopt and had a couple of like horrific experiences where, like, they had the child for a year, from like birth to a year, and
mm-hmm.
they came and took him away on two different occasions.
Mm-hmm.
They decided they were done with like foster to adopt, and then they did a embryo adoption. They
mm-hmm.
had someone else's embryos that were frozen and put into them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that worked out for them. So.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that case, they didn't do like a sperm donor. They took someone else's
mm-hmm.
child
mm-hmm.
put
yeah.
into her womb.
It seems like there's the same distinction when we talk about birth control. It's like, in those cases, the embryos already existed, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, there, you could have donated embryos that are basically like, it's like adoption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these children exist, they're just much smaller, and so you're taking one of them.
Yeah, bringing them out of the
bringing them out of the
prison.
Freezer, right,
yeah.
The free frozen orphanage. Versus, I think it's a little bit trickier when you talk about should you create, and when should you create. I think there's also the aspect of, just as you know, the birth control pill sought to separate sex and
mm-hmm.
conception,
yeah.
you know, this can serve to separate the need for a husband or a wife to
mm-hmm.
conceive a child. So, you know, the design of having two parents, mother, father, and child, can be subverted, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on the ethics of this?
I guess what I don't like is doctors don't like go over the ethical issues. Because we've had stuff pitched to us before. Like, you need this test and this and that done.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we talk to like a parent or someone else in the church, we have no idea the ethical,
yeah.
you know, weight of it.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I kind of came up with this. And is. It's better to know this ahead of time
mm-hmm.
and talk about it ahead of time and try to carefully consider the ethical issues. So, we're going to say something like that? Okay. Yeah, so we're going to answer this question about the biblical ethics of it next week. But I just wanted to introduce the thought. Like, is it ever okay? Is there a conceivable situation where maybe it might be permissible to do donor insemination? So it's a, it becomes pretty interesting when you look at some other factors, because there's some implications for donor egg, right? If you have an infertile couple and it's because one man's sperm doesn't work, or maybe an egg doesn't work, is there a place for using the man's sperm with a donor egg, or vice versa? So that's an issue I'm still thinking through. I mean, it depends on my day, where I'm killed, right? And I think it's also, and I think one thing to consider as well is, as we talk about this too, is why are people in this situation to begin with? Right, it's infertility, and as someone who had 4 kids in 5.5 years, we have never struggled with infertility in our lives, right? And so, as we kind of think through this issue, I think it's also good to kind of think of from a perspective of if you're a couple and you're infertile, and what does that do to you? What are some of the struggles there, and what would drive people to seriously consider some of these options, right? Like your friends or something. So I think if we kind of have those things in mind, it can kind of help us come up with, just some good reasoning that's also very sensitive to people who are kind of, who are struggling with these issues. Because I think that's the thing, like 3% of all births are the result of heavy medical intervention, either artificial insemination with the donor or in vitro or assisted reproductive technologies. Reproductive technologies shows that infertility is a major issue, especially as we have mothers who wait longer to have kids. So let me go ahead and pray, then we'll move on to the next part of our worship service. Well, Father, I do thank you for this time to get together and talk about having babies and when to have them, how much freedom we have. And I just pray for a lot of wisdom as we navigate all these technological issues. And I pray that we will just use this information as we think through it to help those who aren't able to have children, or to help people think about what steps they should take. I pray for this next part of our worship service that it'll be just invigorating fellowship as we talk about you, learn about you, and sing to you. In Christ's name, amen.